The Def Leppard for the 90s released its first studio album in 4 years called Slang last week and resurfaced in, of all places, the backyard of a UCLA frat house. Check it out.
In the 80s, Def Leppard was rock royalty. And not only do they take credit for the overall sound of that decade, but it seems they claim responsibility for the alternative movement of the 90s as well.
The reason Nirvana and Pearl Jam happened was because too many bands sounded like we did. You know, there was your Wingers and your Warrants and your Slaughters, and they were all borrowing our sound.
If there's a problem with having a big successful record, that's it. It's people copying it and burning your sound out for you. So you have to keep changing. That's what we try to do.
Their latest effort is Slang, a self-described organic 90s version of Def Leppard. This time around, the Leps shunned the stifling confines of the studio and recorded their album in a private house on the Spanish coastline.
We had a great view. You know, we could see North Africa from the bedroom window, which was the recording room.
We just took all the furniture out and stuck Rick's drum kit in front of the fireplace on some rug or other, you know, set all the guitar stuff up, and we got unique sounds. We got sounds that you couldn't get in a studio because they're all technically perfect.
Amidst the beautiful Mediterranean setting, the group looked to the other side of the Atlantic for inspiration.
We found ourselves more and more leaning towards black music, whether it be TLC, whether it be Boyz II Men, whether it be Sly and the Family Stone with like wah-wah bass and all this kind of stuff. It's like we just wanted to take in bunches of different influences that weren't just the standard, oh God, we've heard it all before kind of stuff, you know.
Although you won't find any Old Dirty Bastard remixes on this album, some tracks do display a decidedly hip-hop beat. Def Leppard unveiled their latest fare, along with some old favorites, at a UCLA fraternity last week as part of a radio promotion.
I don't know how this happened, but it was extremely cool.
They are by far the ultimate band. I grew up on a little photograph.
It was kind of a surprise to me that they were coming back. I hadn't heard from them in so long, and just to hear the name again was exciting. It was great to see that they were going to be back.
And according to the band, the time to strike is now.
We feel like there's a huge void out there in America at the moment, and we're going to fill it. That's what we hope, you know.
Def Leppard's U.S. tour officially launches June 26th in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Meanwhile, Def Leppard drummer Rick Allen pled not guilty to spousal battery charges in an L.A. court Wednesday. Allen allegedly pounded his girlfriend's head into a ladies' room wall after an argument a year ago at L.A. International Airport. Allen, who has a court date June 26th, could face up to a year in jail and a fine of $1,000 if convicted.
Yeah. Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ, and this is episode 6 in my series on Def Leppard. We're going album by album, and for this episode this week, we're talking about their album from 1996 called Slang. And for this episode, I'm joined by a very special guest from the Rock Solid podcast, Pat Francis. Hey, Pat.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am very good.
Thanks a lot for indulging me here. When I was thinking about, because my idea was to do an episode for each album and get like a fellow podcaster on to shoot the shit for each record. And when I was thinking about who to get for Slang, just from listening to your show and kind of having a feel for your taste, for some reason I just had a feeling that you'd be a fan of this album. And so I contacted you, and sure enough, you were. So here we are.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. This is the one I want to talk about.
Perfect. Yeah, your show Rock Solid. I've been listening to it for a long time. And what's the drummer's name that you just had on recently? Kenny Aronson? Is that his?
Kenny Aronoff.
I was blanking on his name. Yeah, that was a great episode. that he seemed like a lot of fun, a lot of great stories. You have a lot of cool guests on your show. So people should. I mean, if anybody listening who hasn't heard of Rock Solid should definitely check it out.
Well, thank you so much. I find that the guests that are the most fun are the ones that I contact through their website, and they get back to me personally. Whenever you have to deal with managers and agents and all that stuff, that's when it just takes so long, and it kind of wears you down. But whenever I email someone at their website and they get right back to me and say, "Yeah, I'd love to do it," that's when it's the most fun. So that was Kenny. He was like, "I'm there, man. Let's do it."
Yeah, that sounded like a lot of fun. I think the episode I remember most from your show was Greg Kinn. I remember that one was hilarious.
Yeah, he was quite a character, man.
Yeah, that one was really fun to listen to.
His people, I have never had to type up a contract and have anyone sign it except for Greg Kinn.
Really?
He wanted to know exactly what we were going to use this for. He wanted to make sure we weren't making any money off of his name. And it was just like, oh, my God, dude, we're going to do nothing but do a love letter show to you and your music. And people are going to go then to iTunes and buy it. So that's the whole thing with my show. I want people to find music that they never heard before and go to iTunes and click purchase. That's what I want people to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the build up to the Greg Kinn episode wasn't as much fun as the episode itself sounded.
No, the build up. Because we recorded that in a hotel in San Francisco, and they were like, "Where are we doing it? And what's going on?" I mean, it was no matter how many times you told them exactly what was going on, they would come back with, what are we going to do now? What's a podcast?" I mean, it was just like, oh, my God, guys, please just show up, please. But yeah, then once they're in the room, it always goes well.
Yeah. He was very entertaining, but he was kind of one of those guys where at some point with the stories, you start to think, I wonder how much he's embellishing here. I wonder, you know, what percentage of this is embellishment.
But, exactly. Especially with him, because he's written a few books.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you start to write a story, you know, yeah, the embellishing definitely would start. So anyway. You read through his BS.
It was still a lot of fun to listen to, though. Have you ever tried to get someone from Def Leppard on the show?
I have not tried, but Ricky Warwick was on my show, the lead singer of Black Star Riders.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
And he's great friends with those guys. Joe produced a couple of his solo albums, and I even saw Ricky open up for Def Leppard, I think, when the Euphoria tour.
Right.
And
yeah.
Although I haven't asked him yet, that is on my list of things to do. And because I know a lot of the guys live here in LA. I definitely know Rick Allen and Phil do. Obviously, you know, I would want Joe, but Rick's been there the whole time, so he would be amazing also. So
yeah, for sure.
Hopefully I can get one of those guys someday.
That would be amazing. I know, yeah. Joe lived out there at one point. I don't know where he lives currently, but Vivian was actually in that version of Thin Lizzy with Ricky, I think.
That's
for
right.
A period,
yeah.
Of time,
and, and I think Viv lives out here too. I call him Viv. I don't know. You call him Vivian. I call him Viv.
I think either one works.
Yeah. So now in the you called Slang the sixth album. So you refer then to Retroactive as more of a compilation then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sixth studio album. Yeah, I had thought about doing an episode about Retroactive, but I just kind of talked about some of the songs, you know, that were some of those are from the previous recording sessions and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on Retroactive, though, for sure.
There really is. There. That's a cool little album to pick up for sure.
Yeah, it really is.
I love that cover when you hold it back and it's a skull.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty neat. So where does Def Leppard rank in bands that you like? Are they one of your top bands?
Yeah, yeah. They're like top five for me, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
But specifically more the Pete Willis years than anything else, but yeah. And they have been one of my favorite... They were one of my first favorite bands, you know, going back to when I was a kid. And I mean, Yeah, my appreciation for them has never diminished, you know, over the years. I've never really been the kind of person that says, well, I used to like that. I still like all the same stuff. I just like more stuff and, you know, I build, yeah. I add more and more, but I don't stop liking a band I liked when I was a kid or anything like that. So,
no, I mean, I agree with you, but I'm not one of those people that says everything they do is great either.
If
a band pulls up a clunker, I'll say, yeah, that wasn't that great for me, but I'm still glad they're making new music. Yeah, I still love new music by these old bands. I don't know why people go, they should just tour and just, you know, not make new music. I'm like, but they need a creative outlet, and the touring, that's fun and that's money, but that's not a creative outlet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure some nights if they could phone it in, we wouldn't know it. So yeah, I love the self-titled album that came out this year. Did you like it?
I liked it. I haven't listened to it very much. But yeah, it was, you know, it was better probably than the previous couple. So there was that, I guess. I need to give it more of a listen.
I think it's pretty solid. You should give it a whirl. But we don't want to talk about that. What do we want to talk about, BJ?
Yeah, well, you know, you said you don't just because you like a band doesn't mean you like everything they did. And so people who listened to last week's episode about Adrenalize heard me and Eric Miller have a lot of negative things to say about Adrenalize.
That's a real generic album, isn't it?
Yeah, they really, well, like you used the phrase phoned it in. And it feels like that's a lot of what happened on Adrenalize, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like, I'm looking at it, right? I like Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion.
Yep, that's my favorite on there. Yep.
Yep, and I really like Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad? I mean, as far as a ballady type thing, I like that. And the version of Tear It Down that's on here is not as good as the B-side from the Hysteria album.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, Let's Get Rocked is Heaven Is, Make Love Like a Man. I mean, these are just throwaway personal property. These are just throwaways to me.
Yeah, we talked about how Personal Property could be a Steel Panther song and you wouldn't even blink an eye.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was the first disappointment from Def Leppard in an amazing career up to them. But yeah, that's for me, that's the one that does not get, even though I bought the, I did buy the deluxe edition, but it does not get many spins from this fan.
Right. And so, yeah, there was, I think it was a 4-year and 8-month gap between Pyromania and Hysteria, and then a 4-year, 7-month gap between Hysteria and Adrenalize. Of course, you know, there were certain events that occurred that made a lot of that time necessary,
yeah,
I guess.
In the family.
Yeah. But they didn't take as long after Adrenalize to put their next album out. It was actually it took them less than 2 years to actually, you know, record it and get it out. So from when they started working on it, at least. So we're talking about Slang. And for me, so much better than Adrenalize. It's insane.
Oh, my God. Yes, I agree with you. And it's... It did not do well.
No.
And I think I many theories. First of all, even though Adrenalize sold 3 million copies in the US, I think they lost a lot of fan base with that album.
Yeah.
But you know what the big thing is I think that really hurt Slang is they didn't have that logo on the cover. And I know that sounds crazy, but I think that's a point of purchase thing.
Yeah, well, the timing of changing their logo, it seemed maybe disingenuous even to their fans.
Yeah, they were almost saying, "Hey, we're doing a whole." They were like telegraphing that we're doing a different thing.
Yeah,
but I got to tell you, from listening to it this week, I listened to this album at least six times this week in preparation for the show, and there's only about there's 11 songs, and I'd say three or four of them veer off into stuff that doesn't sound like Def Leppard. And I think the other stuff sounds like Def Leppard, and it's amazing.
There's definitely a huge portion of the album that does sound a lot like Def Leppard, a lot more than probably someone who hasn't listened to it in a while would think.
Yeah.
I would think a person who really hasn't listened to this album since it came out would go back to it and realize that, yeah, you know, this doesn't sound as different as maybe I thought.
Yeah, and it might be one of those albums too where you go, oh man, I really missed the boat on this. I could have been listening to it for the past 20 years.
Well, we talked on the Adrenalize episode about, you know, 3 million copies for Def Leppard as the follow-up to Hysteria was actually a huge flop, and I know I said that you would think 3 million copies was kind of a given. Like, the fact that they didn't go beyond that was almost like they sold zero copies, because they were going to sell those almost no matter what they put out. But the fact that they didn't even have a top 10 single from that record, even though they released 7 singles, I think they just had no hit songs from it. And just, I think the quality of the album is the reason it tanked. And that must have hurt. I mean, obviously, the whole shift in the musical climate also, you know, when Slang comes out, it's a completely different world for Def Leppard. But the combination of Adrenalize just failing on so many levels and, you know, they were releasing this album into a world where, you know, Def Leppard was not a hot commodity.
Nope, they're not cool anymore. And I feel bad for Vivian Campbell, because this was his real first full studio album with the band.
Right.
And then for it to stiff, he must have been like, oh boy, I hope people don't blame me for this.
Sure, and he wrote the first single too. But yeah, so Slang was recorded in Spain and Dublin between May of 94 and February of 96. And like you said, when they came out, it's a new logo. It's a pretty new sound. Definitely on the surface, when you first start, like with the first song, Truth, it kind of hits you right away that this is not Adrenalize, at least that's for sure.
I don't particularly like the sequencing of the album. I don't think those first two songs, I like them, but I think they would have done better for me if they were deeper in the mix. I actually think they should have kicked it off with Slang, right into All I Want Is Everything, and then Work It Out. I wish those were the first three songs, and then you could drop Truth and Turn to Dust in there a little bit later on. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Slang as an opener, surely, not only because it's the title track, but just, you know, yeah, the vibe of the song too. I mean, you have to say that Slang was definitely an attempt to adapt to the alternative or modern rock scene. Obviously, if you look at it cynically, maybe there's elements of pandering, but it's still, to me, it feels pretty genuine. And, you know, the very creative, they were obviously trying to fit in on some level, but it's they definitely didn't pull a Carnival of Souls, you know?
Oh, no, not at all. No, I just thought they were flexing their creative muscle. I never thought that, oh, they've changed their sound to be something else. Because again, I think a lot of these songs definitely have a Def Leppard vibe totally. I mean, I love Deliver Me and Blood Runs Cold and Where Does Love Go When It Dies? I mean, those are Def Leppard songs. And I love the first single, Work It Out. I didn't know that Vivian wrote that solo until you just said it, but I love that song. And they had a lot of, there were quite a few videos off of this album too, if I remember. So they were still trying, you know, to rope in what was ever left of their MTV crowd.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bands, you know, a lot of hard rock bands tried to make a grunge album, and those are the albums that really turned me off. But Def Leppard and also Bon Jovi with Keep the Faith, they both kind of made more subtle attempts, I guess, at adapting to what was going on, and it worked a lot better for
now,
them.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I love Keep the Faith. I think that's an amazing album. It is. I mean, I love Bon Jovi. I know people don't, but I love Bon Jovi. And I'm still amazed that Bon Jovi, when he comes to Los Angeles, they sell out the biggest venue here, which is the Staples Center, with no opening act or any. They're not on a pack. They've never been on a package tour. It's never been like Bon Jovi, Styx, and REO Speedwagon. You know, it's never been anything like that. But Def Leppard somehow, who I always think of them and Bon Jovi together, because they had these gigantic albums, and then they had like a gigantic, you know, Slippery When Wet is Pyromania, and then Hysteria is New Jersey. You know, they just they went one even better. But I can't figure out why Def Leppard isn't still like at the top. Like Bon Jovi's touring, they still do amazing. It's you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Bon Jovi really somehow managed to ride out the whole period in the 90s that destroyed the careers of most of their peers. They yep. managed to ride it out and avoid that somehow better than anyone else did. I guess one big reason is they did manage to have a big hit with It's My Life, you know, afterwards.
That was in 2000. Yeah, they had a huge comeback with that. It's so funny. Because I will wholeheartedly admit that I love Bon Jovi, but I will also admit that he recycles the same themes in his songs over and over and over, but people must just love it. I also tell people, I'm not turning this into a Bon Jovi show, but I always tell people, I go, if you take some of these Bon Jovi songs, these recent Bon Jovi songs, but if Bruce Springsteen recorded those, people would go, that's a great song, man. Sorry about the tangent.
No, yeah, I'm a big fan of Bon Jovi too. So yeah, and it is pretty miraculous that they still have the level of popularity that they do have. It's just one more. Both of the bands we're talking about, Def Leppard and Bon Jovi. It's absolutely ludicrous they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you know, just unforgivable, really. But I mean,
it's ludicrous. Yeah. And the last time I saw Def Leppard was about a year and a half ago. They were opening for Kiss, and man, Def Leppard was so good.
So the week that's, I looked it up, and the week Slang was released, the Fugees was the number one record, and in the top 10 you had Hootie and the Blowfish, Alanis Morissette, Pantera, Dave Matthews, The Cranberries, and Rage Against the Machine. That's the world that they were releasing this album into. I mean, the highest it charted was number 14, and it didn't even go platinum. Still to this day, as far as I can tell, it hasn't even gone platinum. So that's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's still just gold.
Yeah. They made it without Mutt Lang. He wasn't involved in any way, which we talked on Adrenalize. He's listed as executive producer, whatever that meant, but he was listed as a co-writer on every song except Tear It Down. So, you know, he still had his hands all over that in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, they made this completely without him. And the guy that produced it, Pete Woodroff, however you pronounce it, he really hasn't done a whole lot besides work with Def Leppard, as far as I can tell. Yeah, so, I mean, they were obviously, even if the whole alternative, you know, the revolution will be televised thing hadn't been happening in the 90s, I think they still would have made a major shift away from Adrenalize. I mean, that seemed like the obvious move for them to make. They could not keep going in the direction they were going with Adrenalize. I don't think they would have, no matter what.
Yeah, no one would have wanted to hear Adrenalize 2.
No.
The funniest thing to me was when the follow-up to Slang comes out, Euphoria.
Yeah.
And the album cover is basically just, boom, the logo and the word Euphoria. It was like, screw it. You didn't like Slang. Here you go.
Yeah.
Here's the logo. And here's a title that ends in IA.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's pretty much exactly what they did, which is pretty sad because I really appreciate what they did with Slang. And it must have been pretty disheartening for them to see it tank and then say, all right, I guess we just got to do this again.
I know. Oh, but that said, Euphoria is far and away better than Adrenalize.
Very true. Yeah. So in between, I guess in between Adrenalize and Slang, Phil Collins got divorced. Rick Savage was diagnosed with Bell's palsy. And Rick Allen and Joe Elliott were both arrested for spousal abuse. Def Leppard drummer Rick Allen was ordered to clean up graffiti for a month to get a year's worth of domestic violence counseling for beating his wife. He was arrested in June of 95 for choking his wife and slamming her head into a wall at LA International Airport. And then Joe Elliott, in May of 96, was arrested. Police went to Elliott's home after a local hotel owner complained he could hear an argument. They spotted scratch marks on his wife's arms and bloody scrapes across Elliot's stomach.
I almost wish I didn't know that now. Stuff like this always taints me on stuff. I'm like, oh man, guys.
I can hold my head high knowing full well that what I was accused of absolutely did not happen.
It gives a picture of what was going on. You know, they were just not in a good place after Adrenalize and while making this album. It seems like it was a big mess. Yeah, it's just, and then the album comes out and completely tanks. And yeah, so then, you know, that just, like you were saying, then they end up just making Euphoria and just kind of saying, fuck it. But yeah. Yeah, this whole Slang period, even though I think they're really proud of the album, it's also probably just the whole time period they just want to forget, you know?
None of this gets played in concert. They don't even play one song, do they? I don't remember them playing any of this recently.
No, probably not. Probably not. I have some other quotes, like Peter Woodruff, the producer. He said Nirvana had changed everything, and Def Leppard was listening to a whole new type of music. They wanted to grow as a band, and of course, they were writing songs without Mutt. The band wanted to experiment and create something completely new. It was strange to be moving away from the usual Def Leppard sound, but at the same time, it was really exciting. And I guess they recorded a lot of this album just as a band, you know, not a lot of overdubs on it. That was kind of the idea going in. Well, and they make a big deal out of how Rick Allen actually went back to playing a lot of real drums, you know, on this.
Yeah. Yeah. The drums on this, the drums sound really great. And I was just thinking about that today. It doesn't have that electronic sound to it at all. This yeah. album sounds great. The recording of this album really sounds great.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I have a quote from Joe Elliott where he says, there was a period with Mutt where if you came out with anything slightly negative, it was fuck it and it was gone. So I guess he was trying to say that, you know, with Slang, with some, I guess some of the themes, it wouldn't have really worked if Mutt was producing it, I guess he was saying. And Phil Collins said, we've all got personal things that have happened during the recording of Slang and we've just plowed on and some of it has come out on the record. So, I mean, that just kind of feeds into what, I guess, the atmosphere was when they were making it.
Yeah.
And I found some other stuff that Phil and Vivian were saying about the record, too, that was interesting. Like Phil Collins said, it was a drastic move left field for us. It was experimental. It went against the grain from what we normally were doing at the time. We felt like Adrenalize. We felt like with Adrenalize, it started turning a little bit similar. So it was important to do something different at that point. Vivian said, we were never going to go into making that record and write a song like Let's Get Rocked. That was definitely not going to happen. So, yeah. So that's the mindset they were in, which you can definitely hear it on the record. And yeah, so like you said, the song Truth with a question mark right away. Yeah, I agree with you that maybe not as the album opener, but I think it definitely sets the tone that this is going to be different. at least a lot different from Adrenalize.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool song. And I don't think it feels like they're copying anything else or trying to sound like some other band that was popular at the time. They were maybe, it's a very different approach insofar as the production. And yeah, like they were, like Phil said, experimental. And really what stands out in this record is like different rhythms and different percussion and things like that. And just different little guitar bits that are thrown in there. So just a lot of production, I guess, is what makes it sound different more than anything.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when this album came out, you know, as always, Def Leppard, I get their album the day of release. And I remember putting it in, and the first two songs, I was like, okay. Because I had heard Work It Out on the radio, and I loved it. And then again, once Slang kicked in, and All I Want Is Everything, and Work It Out, and Breathe a Sigh, and Deliver Me, you know, that's a solid five songs in a row for me. So I was like, yeah, this is great. I think I can remember too telling people, "Do you guys hear the new Def Leppard album?" And they'd go, "Def Leppard."
Yeah, especially in the 90s, getting that reaction was pretty annoying. Yeah.
Yep, very annoying.
Because it just wasn't hip or cool or whatever. Yet, Truth. One thing I was thinking about with this song is you hear some anger in there, and we actually talked on the earlier episodes, like High and Dry and even Pyromania, you do hear some kind of anger or aggression, but they really dropped that on Hysteria and Adrenalize. You didn't get that kind of sort of aggressive tone that they took a lot on High and Dry, and then like with the song Stage Fright or something. So there was an like ominous or menacing vibe, and you didn't really get that at all.
Sounds like they were getting all the menacing vibe out at homes with their wives.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But you do hear that in this song, in Truth, you know, that kind of comes back. There's definitely kind of like an ominous feel to it. I wouldn't say it sounds like an early Def Leppard song at all, but I guess it's definitely not out of character. Maybe it just was considered, you know, if most people are looking at this as a Hysteria band, then this is going to sound pretty odd, but they definitely had this kind of tone on earlier records. So
yeah, the four songs for me that don't sound like Def Leppard are Truth, Turn to Dust, Gift of Flesh, and Pearl of Euphoria. Those four songs, I think, are the ones that if people heard those, you'd go like, who's that? Oh, that's Def Leppard. Really? That's a little, but I think all the other ones have elements, you know, of the Def Leppard that we love.
Yeah. Well, even the ones you mentioned, I think it's more like the verse of the songs. There's a lot of the verses are just like bass and vocals and things like that. And little guitar licks that just kind of come in and out and different things. But They usually, like Turn to Dust, Gift of Flesh, they have a real Def Leppard chorus. But the song as a whole, yeah, it's definitely got a lot of very different production. And like the arrangements are much more experimental or whatever. Yeah, Turn the Dust, written by Phil Collin, I guess. I think the chorus is pretty Def Leppard, but yeah, it's just the way it's producing the atmosphere, especially on the verse. Maybe I'm not 100% on board with with everything about the song, but I do like the hook a lot on the chorus.
Uh-huh.
But then the third song, the title track, Slang, very Def Leppard. This one would almost, you could almost just put it on Hysteria or Adrenalize even, to me.
Yeah, and that song's, it's only about 2.5 minutes long too, but man, it's great.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's it's less than 3 minutes. Truth is pretty short too. But yeah, I love Slang. It's really fun song. It's not incredibly far removed from Pour Some Sugar on Me, really, but I like it more. I think it's a really cool song, and it's just fun. You know, puts a smile on my face. I like it.
You can hear that they're having fun recording it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't think it was going to be a hit in 1996, but it definitely had the potential of being a hit single. It's a really fun song. It just, the timing, just, I don't think, it didn't much matter what they did, I think, at this point.
And as far as songwriting goes, Phil Collins dominates this album. He writes 9 of the 11 songs, co-writes.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
and he has 3 solo writing credits on here too.
Yeah, I think Slang was written by him and Joe, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's another thing about this album. A lot of their albums, you know, there's going to be 5, 6, 7 names as writers on the songs, but not on Slang. Slang, there's a lot of just single writer songs and stuff, which I guess is another reason it's different. Probably it's a not as many cooks in the kitchen, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It's not one of those done by committee, that's for sure.
Yeah. And like the minimal overdubs, things like that, certainly not a description of Hysteria. So. Yeah, so the fourth song, All I Want Is Everything, this song to me is what came to be called modern rock, which really just was like a more serious version of pop rock that developed in the 90s that was just pop, but, you know, conforming to certain conventions, I guess. Whatever modern rock came to be, I'm not a big fan of most things that are called modern rock, personally. And this song definitely fits in with a lot of the stuff that was on the radio at the time, I think. If you didn't tell people it was Def Leppard, it would have fit right in, probably.
That's true.
I don't know how much I like this song. I don't think it... I'm not a huge fan of this one. I think you list it as one that you like, though, right?
I like those kind of, sappy, mid-tempo, ballady type things. So, yeah, I do really like that one.
You know, it fits in kind of with like the Matchbox 20 Lifehouse kind of thing that was going on at the time. That's the kind of vibe I get from it. Which those two bands I mentioned, I'm not a big fan of, so. All I want is everything. Am I asking too much? All I want is everything. Like the feel of your touch. All I held out yesterday.
So then we move on to and Work It Out. It's great.
Oh, wow. I love it.
What a great And that's a great single to choose. They chose the single correctly, because I think it's Def Leppard, but it sounds different. It sounds new and it sounds fresh, but it's still Def Leppard.
Because it's got just great hooks. The chorus is majestic to me. I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's really brilliant. Great arrangement. I love the way it sounds, and the songwriting is amazing. It's my favorite song on the album, so it was a great choice for this single. I wrote down, I can do without some of the Red Hot Chili Peppers bass parts that they threw in.
Yeah.
That was like, that might have been taking it a little bit too far, but this is an amazing song, and it's kind of a crime that it wasn't a hit, or it isn't better known or better appreciated, because it's really, really a great piece of work. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they played this now live, people would be like, is this a new song? This is a great song. It's always a mystery when an album like Slang just doesn't get it the due that I feel it deserves.
Yeah, even when they put out the reissue, you kind of wish this album would be rediscovered. The way, like, you know, there's that self-titled Motley Crue album with John Corabi that everyone ignored at the time, but now everyone considers it this great, you know, legendary album. I'm not really one of those people, but I mean, you wish this album would get rediscovered like that.
Yeah, I do like that John Corabi album, though.
Yeah. I think it's all right, but I'm not really... Now it's got, like, this legendary status, you know, and I could see Slang getting the same kind of long-overdue kind of respect that it never really got.
Now, the difference is, though, that that self-titled Motley Crue album, I really do think they were really trying. They were trying too hard, but I think they succeeded. You know what I mean? Because they were definitely trying to break free of what they had done in the past.
Yeah, that's definitely an example of one of those 80s bands kind of trying to adapt to the alternative thing. But yeah, they didn't. You know, to me, I the most egregious example is Kiss with Carnival of Souls, where it just seemed too transparent what they were up to.
No, I hate that album. I really don't like that album.
Yeah.
I don't like any songs. I don't like one song on that album.
No, neither do I. It's so bad. So Motley Crue, at least they held on to some of their inspiration, and that, you know, there's still really good elements there, where Kiss it was just like an impersonation of Alice in Chains or whatever they were trying to do. this album, I don't think, had sides, unfortunately, because that died. That's another thing that died in the 90s was the concept of an album having sides. But I think Breathe a Sigh would probably be the last song on side one if we had sides. And it makes sense as a last song on side one because it's kind of like a ballad. And, well, it is a ballad. I was thinking, when I was listening to this, it sounds like Savage Garden, you know, or something like that. Yeah.
Let me down slow and easy, 'cause there ain't nothing I can do. I hope and pray my faith won't leave me. When it comes down to me and you,
I don't know if I like Breathe a Sigh that much.
Damn it, you're killing me. I love it.
It's all right. It's definitely not one of my favorites, you know, and coming after Work It Out, there's kind of a contrast there, I guess.
I know what you're saying. but yeah, I love it. Fade up. What about Deliver Me? I'm tired,
feeling hateful. Deliver Me is probably the most... This is the song on the record that has the most like Nirvana-type feel, maybe. I think the lyrics are painful for me on this one. Like he says, I'm tired and feeling hateful. And the lyrics are just kind of obtrusive. So the verse gets a thumbs down for me, but there's a decent hook on the chorus. So I'm kind of torn about this one. I really don't like the lyrics for a Def Leppard song.
Now, currently, we've talked about seven songs so far. It seems like you like less songs than you don't like so far. Am I right or wrong?
I think out of the seven, I like four of them, and three of them I'm a little bit ambivalent about. I like Truth Turn to Dust, and I love Slang and Work It Out. Those two are great. Then All I Want Is Everything, Breathe a Sigh, Deliver Me, I'm kind of ambivalent about, I guess.
And then what about Gift of Flesh?
We'll be right back. Gift of Flesh, I think, is pretty great. It's probably my second favorite after Work It Out. It's the most, it's like the biggest guitars on the record, and has a great bridge. But I think I like the melody of the verse probably the most. But yeah, I'm really big on melody and good hooks, and so Gift of Flesh is definitely one of my favorites. And I think this is one that you mentioned that you didn't think really sounded that much like Def Leppard, but I hear a lot of Def Leppard in this. Just with the melody and the hooks.
Is this the one that starts like da, 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 da? Is that the one?
Yeah, it's got some pretty, it's probably got the heaviest guitar and the most guitar. It doesn't, this is the most guitar based song where it doesn't have a lot of the just vocal and bass sections and stuff like that they do a lot on the album, you know?
Yeah. No, I don't, now that I'm recalling it, I don't dislike that song.
Blood Runs Cold, I think this was kind of inspired by what happened with Steve Clark. I think, yeah, like I said, it's kind of similar to Breathe a Sigh, but I just like this one better. But again, maybe, I don't think I'm 100% behind the production choices all the way through. It's a pretty effective ballad. I like it.
Cool.
And Where Does Love Go When It Dies? I like the acoustic guitars on this one. And like, this is another one with lyrics that that kind of stick out. That, yeah, I think I'd Deliver Me in this one. You get the feeling that they're like, well, we got to write these kind of lyrics for this kind of album or something like right. that.
Could you ever steal a prayer to deny your God? Could you ever buy your love and not count the cost? Could you ever take a life when all was lost? Would it ever be enough? Could you bite the hand that feeds and then ask for more? Could you kiss the wound that bleeds, spit it on the floor? Could you open up your heart and then close the door? Would it ever be enough? Word you whisper, all the tears you hide. You die for love when it's alive. Where does love go when it dies?
This is another one where I was kind of waiting for it to get heavier on the chorus, and then it just doesn't happen, but it's a good song. Vivian plays dulcimer and Phil Collin plays mandolin on it, which is strange.
Yes, there certainly is.
So these two mellow songs right in a row, maybe not the best sequencing, like you were saying.
Right.
Yeah. And then Pearl of Euphoria, the song that ends the album, you already said you don't like it. And yeah, I agree. I wrote down they save the worst for last because, yeah.
It's so funny because the follow-up album is called Euphoria.
Wow, I didn't even think of that.
So that is strange.
Yeah, it's a nice transition there. Well, but luckily, this song is not a pearl of Euphoria the album, because Euphoria the album doesn't sound anything like this song, and that's a good thing.
Nope.
Yeah, what I read is this song, I guess what's on the album was actually built on top of Joe Elliott's original demo. This is definitely trying to be alternative rock and just kind of boring. What one thing?
Yeah, definitely boring song.
Yeah, and one thing that some of these bands, when they did try to be alternative, one thing they would do is just get rid of the hooks. Like they thought that was a way to be alternative.
Carnival of Souls, there's like no choruses, no hooks. It's just terrible.
Exactly. Carnival of Souls, one thing they did was just get rid of any kind of melody at all. That's really was Paul Stanley's approach on that. It's funny when you go listen to it, Paul does an even more ridiculous, like, Alice in Chains imitation than Gene even does.
Yes.
Yeah, like Carnival of Souls, Pearl of Euphoria is just kind of a droning attempt at being alternative or whatever and just doesn't go anywhere. But it's just tacked on the end here. So, and yeah, like you say, then their next album's going to be called Euphoria, so that's pretty funny.
But yeah, I wonder if Slang would have been a hit, I wonder if they would have, if their next album would still have sounded like Euphoria, or if they would have, or not.
I would say not. I would say, if Slang was successful, they probably would have pursued this more, and that would have been cool to see what they might have done. Instead, they tried to just kind of completely revisit Hysteria on Euphoria, which they succeeded with some of the songs, but... I like Slang more than Euphoria, personally.
I gotta check that song list out on Euphoria and see if I can agree or disagree with you. Well, okay, yeah. There's 13 songs on Euphoria. And going through it, I don't like as many as I do on Slang. But the ones I like on Euphoria, I really like.
Yeah, well, the single Promises was really good.
with Mutt Lang co-wrote that.
Right. And I remember the song Paper Sun was a very like classic Def Leppard sounding song.
Yep.
I don't remember what else is good on there. Well, I know the opening song was good. What's the opening one?
Demolition Man.
Yeah, that one's good. Maybe Euphoria. Maybe Euphoria is more competition for Slang than I remembered.
Blues music, R&B, is all based on slang. The whole thing, you know, classical and opera is very correct and proper. And it's what it is. And rock music is a reaction against that. Rock and roll, when it first came out, was a reaction. And it was based on slang. You know, it was slang lyrics, slang words. So that's one of the reasons that we've called this album Slang. This album is very organic and natural. Rick Allen's playing a real drum kit. The guitars are just loud, you know, Marshalls and Les Pauls. It's not all worked out in these perfect sounds and that. It's a bit more rough and raw. And the time we spent on it has mainly gone on the songs, not on the recording.
Well, BJ, this was fun.
I hope so. Was it? I don't know if
yes,
I believe you.
I love talking about music.
All right. I hope it wasn't too awkward.
All right. Well, look, if you ever get to Los Angeles, let me know in advance and we'll schedule a time for you to be on Rock Solid.
My next guests have sold 30 million albums in the U.S. alone. Tonight, they're making their first American television appearance. We're excited to have them here performing a song from the new CD Slang. Please welcome Def Leppard.
Black and white, you take it all for granted. I'm the one who turns you on. You don't know where you belong and nothing seems to matter. I'm the one who's holding on. It's alright to be wrong. All needs a time, but nothing here can last that long. You show the world a brand new face. It's taken us all this time. All this time. All of this down. For an answer, I'm the one who holds the key. You don't know where you belong, and nothing seems to matter. I don't like this mystery. Show the world a brand new face. It's taken us all this time.
Wow. you on. When you don't know where you belong and nothing seems to matter, I'm the one who's holding on, holding on, holding on.
And now to play us out.
What does that mean? To play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with a song that Joe Elliott wrote for a British soccer movie starring Sean Bean. A movie called When Saturday Comes came out in 1996, the same year as Slang. I believe that the song is credited to Def Leppard on the soundtrack of the movie and on the Slang. It's on the Slang Deluxe Edition. But from what I've read, it's only Joe Elliott and Rick Savage from the band performing on the song. I'm not sure where that info comes from, but this is a pretty cool song. Joe wrote it for the film. It's the name of the film, When Saturday Comes. So here it is, When Saturday Comes by Def Leppard or Joe Elliott or whatever. Till next time.
Wind me up, see what I can do for you. Switch me on, I'd do anything you want me to. Let me go, and I come ticking like a time bomb. Just call my name. We'll be right back.
be back.